Well, welcome to Yada Yada Radio and to our Shabbat Torah study. It's good to have all of you with us, and it's good to be starting on time with a full cast of characters. Hello, Larry. Hello, James.
Yeah, I missed that last week, didn't I?
Well, the error last week was mine, so I'm going to apologize for all those who gathered last week and got a late start, but you all got a strong finish with the Larry-inator. I had both of my sons and my wife and my daughter-in-law, and we took a very long drive that extended for a much longer period of time than I thought it was going to. And at the last minute, I tried to reach out to Larry to see if he could do the show, and unfortunately, he was not, as I was not checking my email as regularly as I would normally. And so we apologize for the late start, but thank you, Larry, for picking up the yoke anyway.
it was kind of a short notice on the fly thing. I couldn't even remember how to get in. It had been a while, you know, since I thought about it and got it.
You know, I think I'll just go ahead and share the password. It is I think it's when you go to. Because there's nobody here that is going to be malignant, so all family. But if you go to Blog Talk Radio, I believe the username is just simply Yada, Yada.
It is.
James, a long time ago, the James that was the original administrator of the forum, James Doyle, started this. He was the one who said, what if I set this up and would you do an hour talk show a week years ago? And he's the one that went to Blog Talk Radio and opened an account for us. And his password is the same one we still use to this day. It is simply Lucky 7, lowercase L in Lucky and numeral 7. So Lucky 7 is the password. So if any of you wish to book shows, you know, you're welcome to use this forum any way that you'd like. You can add shows, communicate with one another, do programs, but that's how you would log into it. Larry, you and I and Kirk had a conversation during the last hour of the Shattering Mist program that I would like to continue with a little bit before we move on to the
other. Was it about Texas football being kind of weak?
It's not about Charlie Strong.
Okay.
It is a moral code that precludes a full complement of players. And I'm not in a position to speak because I went to the University of Spoiled Children, USC, and we are so deeply sanctioned that I'm not sure that we can even put a full cadre of players on the field at any one time. But I will be watching Baylor play Kansas State, hoping they prevail, because I have my youngest goes to Baylor as a graduate student there, and I'd like to see them move on in the playoffs. Nothing else. It's enjoyable banter between.
Well, I was just taking a swipe at Sonia. She lives for Texas football, so I had to do that.
Hi,
Sonia.
Well, you know, the Cowboys are still in the playoffs, although they're hit and miss, and Houston has the most interesting man in the game in J.J. Watt, so he's fun to follow. And you've got TCU and you've got Baylor, two of the top, I think, four teams in the country. So there's things to
see.
What
happened to Texas Tech, though? You know, I mean,
the Red Raiders are having a off year. Would be the best way to describe. I actually follow Big 12 football again because it's just chit chat with my son who is also a kind of a sports fanatic, and it's fun to talk about that kind of stuff. You know, just good camaraderie. Today, the primary theme came up in the third hour. Was Yahweh's means to recognize a false prophet. And what's interesting is the statement that I read from Devarim in the 18th chapter was actually before the test. because the next line that Yahweh is going to use, he's going to say, you know, if you're should wonder in your heart who is speaking for Yahweh and who is not, then he delineates what you should look out for. And he repeats the concept of Zed, which is the first thing that he brings up to preface his means to identify a false witness. And the reason is that you don't really have to get past Zed, the Hebrew word Zed, to understand Yahweh's style, Yahweh's nature, and human nature relative to his. Because what Zed says is, if somebody does this for personal gain, if they speak for him because they want renown or fame or credit or acknowledgement, if they speak for him presumptuously, claiming to do so without any evidence, if they're egotistical, then they're not speaking for him. Yahweh loves passion. He loves enthusiasm, but he does not like ego or conceit because, quite frankly, last time I checked, we've got nothing to be egotistical about. I got nothing to be conceited about. And so the moment somebody moves into that mode of pretending that they're important, you know, being the senior pastor of the church, being the pope, being a bishop, being a cardinal, being, you know,
being a movie star, being the
right
somebody in charge of a church, any of that.
Right.
A political actor.
If they quote something that they would say gives them credibility, if they try to promote their credentials, they're not speaking for God. You know, I am not an example, and I'm not setting myself up as an example, but I want to share my personal experience because I just think it's relevant here. I begin Yada Yah in the opening chapter, before you even begin with Hiya, the letter to the reader, the prologue to the whole thing, by saying, I'm irrelevant. You know, if you're interested in my credentials, I'm not going to impress you. Go away. Even if I had credentials, I wouldn't share them with you, and I don't have any. And unless you approach Yahweh with that mindset and his testimony with that mindset and conveying his testimony with that mindset, you're not only not speaking for him, you're counterproductive. Now, Larry, you do a lot of wonderful things on your Facebook site, and you engage, and you're a huge contributor to the Shattering Myths show. But, you know, quite frankly, your testimony is not as interesting as Yahweh's.
I would guess not.
You know,
want to hear me? Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead, James.
No, I said, I know who I'd rather listen to. No offense to Larry.
Yeah. But,
none,
you know,
taken, really.
You know, I mean, but what I enjoy is if we're having a discussion and somebody says something that is religious or political or counter to Yahweh's testimony, Larry studies Yahweh's word to the point that he can immediately retrieve a passage from Yahweh's Torah, prophets, and Psalms that's applicable to that particular discussion, and I love hearing Larry recite Yahweh's testimony. But under that basis, we're not listening to Larry; we're listening to Yahweh.
Yeah, it's and that's just another dead giveaway on Sheol. You know, how many people that spoke for Yahweh had their personal historian?
None that I'm aware of. It's not. I can answer the question. None. Who spoke for Yahweh that said, "But I say"?
Someone just following him around, telling him his life story and writing it down. The only reason we know Abraham's story is because God told it to us.
Correct.
Well, we don't know anything about anybody else standing significant.
Do we know anything about Abraham before Yahweh said, "Hey, Abram, I'm Yawa. I'd like
no.
you to follow me. Walk away from your country and come to a place that I have prepared for you. Do we know
even
anything
that
happened in his life prior to that time?
Right.
Yeah.
Even
we
after that,
lives,
all we know is he trusted Yawa.
Right.
We don't know much about Abraham. I mean,
really.
No,
I don't think we know anything about his life prior to that time. Why? Because it's irrelevant.
Well, but he listened, and no one else did, apparently.
When you consider, for example, the greatest of the prophets, which would be Yahshua, he has the most to say prophetically, covers the widest swath of time. Did Yahshua tell you anything about himself other than, this is my name, and this is the time that I lived? I'm going to put it my time so that you know it. In the context of Israel's kings, just so you know, a chronology of when all of this was shared with me.
No, we don't know anything about him. I mean, we really don't. I've seen him try to put something on History Channel. They made it sound like he was a Jewish leader of some kind, and that isn't true either.
Did Yahshua have a following?
Not that I'm aware of, and I guess they followed him down the street long enough to kill him once, you know.
But it's just that Paul is the inverse of everybody who speaks for God, and it's the dead giveaway. People who claim to have positions of authority, power, or credentials, for example, the scholar that, particularly the religious scholar.
Someone like Philip Comfort?
Yes, I mean, immediately discount and discard almost everything they have to say. I mean, it's sometimes the research, the evidence that they bring up may have merit, but their conclusions regarding it, their opinions regarding it, have none.
You cannot speak
for God.
I saw one in our group that came along, and he was wanting to study, that there'd be great merit in studying the works of some theologian that had studied the Qumran community. Well, what I know about the Qumran community is mostly they were a religious community. They were lost.
Right.
The thing is, they weren't trying to hide Yahusha, and they didn't hide Yahweh's name.
When it comes to the Qumran scrolls, we should be really careful. And the reason we should be careful is that they are a valuable resource. We have, for example, every letter and every word of the book that was penned by Yahshua, Isaiah. What a wonderful document.
The rest are just smatterings.
We have pieces here and there. We don't have the whole things. Second of all, there are some differences amongst the Dead Sea Scrolls of the same text, although it's almost never copy editing in the sense of a deliberate change. It's just strictly, the scribe made a mistake. He lost track of where he was, and he skipped a line or repeated a line or something of that nature. Spelled a word incorrectly. That's about the extent of it. But they were copying scrolls from previous scrolls that had been copied by human hands. And while the evidence shows that the Hebrew scribes were the most reliable in human history, they're still not infallible. They're still human, and therefore...
But they're good enough to get the point across, and they're good enough, so we see Yahweh's real nature.
What you can do with the Qumran scrolls that you can't without them is you can pull the Babylonian, Masoretic, Rabbinic copy edits out of the text. So where using the Shoah system, where the rabbis deliberately attempted to mislead, particularly regarding Yahweh's name. What you can do with the Dead Sea Scrolls is you now have a text that its history does not go through Babylon. The Masoretic text is a text where its entire textual history goes through Babylon. And the oldest copy of it is the 11th century. And it is scribed by people who were trying to codify their religious authority. And so it does have at least one word in 14 or 15 that was deliberately changed for the purpose of rabbinic Judaism. With the
I think one of the glaring examples got to be changed. They pierce my hands and feet. They're like lions mauling my hands and feet or something.
When they're talking about what happened on the upright pole. How the Yeshaya 53, Psalm 22, Psalm 88 depict precisely what happened on the upright pole. And in Yeshaya, you know, it speaks about them piercing the hands and feet, which was the means of affixing the Passover lamb to the upright pole. And because that was such a giveaway that Yeshaya had predicted the crucifixion, the rabbinic community changed it. And, you know, like lions, they rip my hands and feet. And you'll find those kind of copy edits and more in the prophetic chapters regarding the work of the Messiah throughout the Masoretic. Correct. What a coincidence. Because the Masoretic, see, part of Masoretic Judaism is that God is incorporeal and that their Messiah, Messiah, is a warlord. He's someone who will have military supremacy. And so he does not fit the presentation of the Messiah in Psalm 22, Psalm 88, or Yeshaya, particularly in the 53rd chapter. He doesn't fit because Yahusha is clearly Yahweh in a corporeal form. A diminished manifestation of Yahweh, that doesn't work when one of your 13 pillars is that God is incorporeal. Because, you know, it's really hard to pierce with nails a incorporeal object. So, it's obvious that he's corporeal when they're piercing it with nails, and when they actually nailed Yahusha to the upright pole, it was such a giveaway that the rabbinic community had served up the Messiah to be to have his body whipped and tortured by the dastardly Romans. That at that point they had to do or chose to do revisionism. You know, it's the same thing, guys, that permeates all of religion. And that is the facts never fit the belief system. So there are two choices. When the facts do not fit the belief system, you can either change the belief system, you can discard the belief system, or you can revise the facts so that the revised facts, which are no longer facts, but the revised revisionist view of things, is consistent. And that's what the rabbis chose to do. What they should have done is discard rabbinic Judaism. They should have nailed the priests to upright poles and rejected them and accepted Yahusha. But they wouldn't.
Well, here they should have. Yeah.
But
they wouldn't get the red
zone. If they wouldn't be beliefs, they'd be understandings.
Correct.
The very fact that they have a belief system means facts don't mean anything to them.
Unfortunately, that's true. You are never going to be successful in an argument with a devoutly religious person because their faith makes them immune to evidence and reason. But that's not true of everyone. In fact, I was reading the chat room and noticed that somebody had a coworker that they shared yada yada with, and immediately it resonated, and they became a very quick study, and have come to do what the rest of us have done. The case Yahweh makes for himself and his covenant is so brilliant, so overwhelming and so enlightening, so reasonable, that almost all of us have the same exact same responses. I'm not going to argue with this. I'm not going to fight this. I'm not going to challenge this. This is brilliant. I accept this. And that's what we have all done. But it gets right back to that point that I want to make. It's that Yahweh's testimony is what prevails. It's what is brilliant. It's what's enlightening. It's what is worth sharing. That's all we're doing here. We want to share what Yahweh has shared with us. None of the three of us, James, Larry, or myself, ever claim personal and unique inspiration. We all say that what we have come to know was made known to us through Yahweh's Torah, through His teaching, through His prophets and Psalms. We read the words that He has shared with us, and we have thought about those words and come to understand based upon what He has shared. Now, that is not to preclude the work of the set-apart spirit in terms of providing additional enrichment and enlightenment, and Yahweh literally taking the hand of those who are observing His testimony and helping us understand so that we come to know Him better and we're better prepared to share what He has to say. But what He is enlightening us on isn't some new mystery. It isn't something that's a personal revelation. He's only providing enlightenment on what He has already shared with all of us. So while we may be more clear in our understanding, for example, the set-apart spirit is the maternal light and essence of Yahweh, and that Yahweh is not a Lord, but instead is our Heavenly Father, and that His name is pronounced Yahweh because that's what we learn from the pronunciation of Torah, and that each of the seven invitations to meet with Him is the path that leads from our corrupt world to His home. And we may have gained insights that say, you know, Yahweh's name begins with the Hebrew letter that means hand, and there are five hands in Yahweh's name, and there are five conditions to participate in the covenant, and there are five benefits to the covenant. You know, maybe there's something to that, that that's way too much to be just a coincidence. We may have come to
You know what? That is an amazing five hands and then the five conditions and the terms and conditions. It's an amazing thing, you know, once you begin to suffer Torah, you know, there's all these things that come into play. And,
right. If you're going to guide them and you are their father and they are your child, you're going to lead with your hand. You're going to reach down and out with an open hand. And that hand is going to grasp a hand that's raised up to you. There's four hands raised up to Yahweh and one that's reaching down the first letter of His name. And so while we have come to understand those things, let's just call those divine revelation. Are there any of those divine revelations that I've just shared that aren't available to everyone looking at Yahweh's words?
No, you've just thought about them.
Yes.
You've just thought about them. You know, why are there five hands? I never thought about that until you just said it.
You know what happened with me? I was looking at the terms and conditions of the covenant, and quite honestly, I wanted there to be seven conditions for the covenant. You know, most everything God does is seven. I wanted there to be seven conditions. I wanted there to be seven benefits. But there aren't. There's five. Five conditions, there are five benefits. And I said, gosh, I wonder why that's the case. I said, well, you know, maybe, you know, if Yahweh designed us so that we, just the way we are, would tell us what we need to know about Him and what He's offering. You know, the very way that that men and women come together as husband and wife and mother and father and conceive and raise children in a home, supporting them, loving them, enriching them, teaching them, empowering them, wanting them to be everything they could possibly be. We are an embodiment of the covenant. And then you look at God wants us to be upright so we can do things together and be engaged together and walk together. And we're the only animal created to walk upright. And then the thing that makes mankind really unique is not only do we have hands, but we have an opposable thumb. And it's our hands that enable us to do so many things that are unique to us as a creation. And I would say, wait a minute. There are five conditions of the covenant, and I've got five fingers on my hand. And, you know, there's one of those conditions that is a prerequisite and four that are terms which follow. And I've got an opposable thumb. And so I can look at my own hand and say, now I understand those are the conditions of the covenant. Even the last one is the shortest one on my hand, the little finger. And, of course, that's about the shortening of the foreskin. I mean, my hand represents the conditions of the covenant. And then I said, well, that's pretty spectacular. I got two of them, and I got five terms, and I got five benefits. Okay, that's pretty spectacular. And then it dawned on me that, oh, wait a minute. Yahweh's name is introducing us to the covenant. The two people standing up in Yahweh's name, the two hays, represent Abraham and Sarah. And Abraham and Sarah represent our Heavenly Father and our spiritual mother, but they represent us choosing to participate in the covenant. And in between them is the tent peg, which speaks of being increased, being added to, being made more secure. On enlarging the home. So, all of that is there.
It's all there. I mean, we can all see it. It's you know, honestly, I think most of what I see, you know, sadly, I get religious people that they'll get on my page for a little while until they find they're not welcome, you know. But the religious people are real big on calling Yahweh Father, not using his name. You know,
right,
my
right.
Father, you know, because they know Lord. Okay, they've already seen all of it on FB every other. You know, you get a lot of posts about who the Lord is now.
Yeah. By the way, there's nothing wrong with calling Yahweh Father. I call him Father, Dad, Father, Heavenly Father all the time because that is the title that defines our relationship better than any other.
Yeah.
That may be.
But the religious people will then use the title, but attributes that are inconsistent with the title.
Right. That's exactly the point here. You know, LB came up with she coined a new phrase from Snarky Land over there called an ass call. In other words, they ask you a question and then they do the opposite.
Right.
I find it so disingenuous that these people will, you know, they'll ask questions and then do the exact opposite. In other words, oh, Father, and then we're going to do all this stuff that doesn't please Yahweh, you know, like calling him Lord or running off to church on Sunday or taking part in, you know, Tammuz's birthday or any number of other things.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are the most disingenuous, phony people on the planet.
Correct.
I mean, how can you disregard everything Yahweh says and then say, he's my Father?
Yeah. No, he's not. Now, one of the things, before we leave this, the idea of the hand, is that there really is no symbol that Yahweh could choose to define himself and what he is offering, what he wants, more than an arm and hand reaching out, open hand, reaching down and out to us. the Yod, which has been corrupted to Yod, and Yahweh's name defines him. It defines his role as Father of the Covenant. It defines his role as guide and teacher. It defines his purpose of reaching down and out to us so to lift us up so that we can stand with him, which is what the two people standing with him represented in his name. And those two people are He, which means to observe, means to look up, to pay attention. It is so beautiful. And when you consider how powerful Yahweh's name with the hand is, and how magnificent it is to have two people in Yahweh's name, because Yahweh is trying to increase us, to enrich us, to empower us, to make us more secure, and you look at that in his name, and you understand that is the covenant. That's who he is. That's how he wants us to approach him. That's how he's approaching us. And to throw all of that away by rejecting his name, it's so sad. And it gets back to this this thing that we were talking about this morning. This is something that's plagued me all of my life. I'm very enthusiastic. I'm very passionate. And when you're enthusiastic, when you're passionate, when you have confidence, when you have conviction, people that lack those things tend to think that such people are arrogant, and they tend to label those who are aggressive as arrogant. And quite frankly, there is no correlation between those things.
In fact, Yahweh says that being part of the family is being, you know, passionate about the family covenant. I mean, you have to be pretty passionate about it. People are dying,
right?
Because of the lies. I mean, they're literally dying. You know, if you sit there and you knew a murderer next door, you know, with his machete or whatever, and every time somebody walked down the street, he ran out and he chopped them up, you could get pretty passionate about telling people, don't walk that way. And that's the position we find ourselves in.
Right. Don't get down on your knees. Don't bow. Don't do those kinds of things. Stand up. Look up. Reach
that's
up.
That's what part of the uprightness is about. I used to think it was a moral quality for some reason when I went to church. I mean, I thought that's what it was.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, although we're, you know, pretty stable people in that regard, we're still just people. And it's not what it's about. Wow. It's about being realistic. I look at that term upright, and it says to me, realistic.
Be real.
You know, you have to.
I look at upright, and I think that since we're talking about Yahweh's name and insights that we can glean by being observant. And that's, by the way, the 119th Psalm. We're actually talking about the 119th Psalm now, whether everybody recognizes it or not. Because Doe's whole approach to the 119th Psalm is look at the letters. I'm going to look at the 22 letters in the Hebrew language. I'm going to present the 22 letters in alphabetic order, one letter at a time, and I'm going to tell you what those letters tell me about Yahweh and his Torah and his covenant. That's the purpose of the 119th Psalm. Observe so that you know, consider so that you understand, and then once you know and understand, respond. So we are talking about the 119th Psalm all the way through this. So upright. There's two people in Yahweh's name. They're both standing upright. So why is upright such a big deal? Well, first of all, if you are upright and you are around the judge, because Yahweh is also the eternal judge, if you're upright before the judge, you're not being judged. You're a witness. If you're down on your knees before the judge, you are being judged. And so those in the covenant are upright. When you're upright and on your feet, you're in a position to be arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder, and eye to eye, of equal status with the person you're having a relationship with. With lords, you know, throughout popes and lords and kings, You always had to bow down so you were not at their level. Their throne was always set on high so that they looked down upon you. Yeah, I was saying exactly the opposite. The whole idea of this relationship, I want you to be upright, because if you're upright, we're doing this together. Then I'm lifting you up so you're more like me. I don't want you to be down there. I want you to be up here.
You know, it changes the character of the person. Because, you know, the minute you're on your knees to somebody, that's not a comfortable position to be in unless there's something seriously wrong with you from a psychological standpoint.
All right. Oh, yeah.
And
with a father, you're going to be on your knees.
It changes Yahweh's nature.
If Larry tried to walk, Larry, any distance effectively.
On my knees? No.
Well, not on your knees. Bent over. Just bent over. You know, just rather than with a straight back, bent over. You can't see where you're going. It's really uncomfortable. Right? By the way, James, you wanted to know how your new bike is working. It works so well that we know that you're active in the chat room. And the computer keyboard, you probably need to be a little quieter on the typing because it's really loud.
Yeah, you're banging away there, James.
Yeah. We love you, and we know what you're doing. We know why you're doing it, and we appreciate you doing it. But you did ask how your new mic is working, and I'm telling you, it works so well that we can hear every letter. If it was like a
man,
drone phone,
you can type, James.
Yeah,
you sound like
type,
a machine gun over there.
Yeah, you're good at it.
I'm trying to adjust the sensitivity right now. I'm hoping to get rid of that.
Okay. All right.
That's one of those things. It's a new toy.
Hey, you know, we say it in appreciation and love, not as a criticism. But we thought that you'd probably want to know.
Yes, thank you.
There is something about a person standing up. You know, if you have a backbone, if you're willing to stand up, if you're willing to go against the crowd, if you're willing to stand up for the truth, for Yahweh, even though it means that people are going to fling crud at you. That's the kind of people Yahweh likes. Stand up straight. You know, show a backbone, you know. And in fact, Yahweh's word for essential, he doesn't use it very often. But he does speak of the essential days in our lives and in his calendar. And the very word that he uses for essential is the same word for backbone, the skeletal structure upon which we are able to stand upright.
You know, LB had pointed out to me too that the hand is also symbolic of the picture of the fat of the offering. You know, the goal of the liver. It looks like a hand.
Oh yeah.
Set apart to Yahweh. So, you know, the person that did that sacrifice obviously was Yahweh. So,
of course.
You know, that's there too. There's a lot to this, you know.
If you were to look up the Yod in Hebrew, the Hebrew word for hand, Yod, the first letter in Yahweh's name, after saying hand, the next thing it's going to say is ability to do whatever is required. Power. Influence. And so when you look at hand, it's not just the physical structure of the hand. It's that with our hands we can do. And Yahweh was saying, this is my hand. I am personally going to do what is required to achieve what I'm proposing. And that means you have the authority and the power and the ability to accomplish what you set out to do. That's what Yod means in Hebrew. And so it's Yahweh as our Father has the ability, has the authorization, the credibility, the power to actually reach out to us and lift us up. And what's interesting about Yahweh's nature, which makes him so lovable, so approachable, is that he did it in the manner that's the antithesis of religion. Rather than having us get on our knees to worship him, he got down on his knees to lift us up. Now, Yahusha is Yahweh on his knees. It's Yahweh being willing to diminish himself to increase, to empower, and to enrich us. Now, that's as good as it gets. And when you recognize that Yahweh diminished an aspect of himself to lift us up so that we could receive the benefits of the covenant, at that point, we get right back to anybody that's got an ego and says, listen to me, and if you don't agree with me, you're going to be condemned forever. I could never say anything that's untrue. You know, I'm entirely perfect. God has given me the authority over all of this. I have been given the secret inside mysto revelation that no one else has received. God appointed me from the womb to do this, and the entire human race other than the Jews are my personal domain. When you hear somebody say that, God's vomiting. A God who got down on his knees and diminished himself to lift us up doesn't need, want, or care for somebody with that kind of ego. If you don't look humbly at Yahweh getting down on his knees to vindicate you, James, there's something wrong with you. I mean, if you, Larry, aren't appreciative for him doing everything required to enrich you, you know, there's just something wrong with your perspective.
It isn't just that. It's the reaching out with the words over thousands of years and the effort that went.
Right.
The effort that went forth in that and the concepts that it carried. And I realize they've been intentionally diluted and turned around and stood on their head and twisted. And that's exactly what he said would happen with them. There's so many different ways that he, you know, there's prophecies we don't even consider.
Correct.
You know, like the twisting of his words is an example.
Right.
You know, they're going to twist my words, turn them into religion, and they did it.
And they did it.
Abracadabra.
Right.
You know?
They did it. And I want to tell you, this is something else that provides a humility in me. Now, I'm humble like Dode is humble. You know, Dode comes across like a ton of bricks. I mean, he is right in your face. He is singing the song. He's belting it out. He doesn't care who he offends. He's going to tell what he has, he's going to share with what he has learned from Yahweh, and he's going to take no prisoners. This is the truth. Bluntly, I've got that. That's my style of humble. Humble doesn't mean meek. It just means you know your relative value compared to Yahweh and his testimony. But when Yahweh took the time, put himself out there, made himself vulnerable by telling us who he is, by revealing his plan, by promising to enrich and empower and adopt, perfect, make immortal those who accept his plan. Knowing full well that the preponderance of people, particularly those in positions of leadership, were not only going to twist what he had to say, but were going to vomit all over what he had to say. That they were going to twist it and corrupt it and demean it. Can you imagine being God and having created the universe, having power of life and death, and
having
enduring
the words.
Your creation, and sharing all this, and enduring your creation, mocking you for it? That takes a really big
deal. Yeah, you know, I mean, he writes down the definition of humble for us. He tells us that permit me neither poverty nor wealth, break bread for me as clearly communicated and prescribed, lest I be self-sufficient and deemed insufficient by you. There's the definition of humble.
Right.
It isn't walking around like a rug mat. Christianity makes it sound like, you know, oh, somebody punches you in the face and you go, oh, thank you, kind sir. You know, I mean, this is stupid.
What are the fourth and fifth benefits of the covenant?
Well, to be empowered and enriched. Is that
there
what
you
mean?
Go.
Yeah.
Empowered and enriched by Yahweh. So if you're empowered and enriched by Yahweh, are you going to be a somebody who who faints from debate, who won't engage, who's afraid to stand up. Come on.
No. I mean, this,
are you a person that's going to run and hide? Are you a person that's going to have somebody put you in a little basket and lower you down in a on rope outside of a window to take you out of town by night because the dastardly Jews are chasing you? No. No, we're empowered and we're enriched.
Frustrating a basket.
You know?
Yeah, it's so sad. I had a woman yesterday actually. I was breaking down some crime statistics, and she said, "Well, remember, Yah was watching you." And I said, "Yah was watching me." I said, "So then your idea is that I compromise?" She goes, "Well, it's the way you put things." You know,
she did not like the facts. The facts
were
inconsistent with what she wanted to believe. So since your facts were hostile to her beliefs, it's the way you put things.
Mm-hmm. And basically what she was saying is you're not supposed to offend anyone and you're supposed to compromise. And, you know, and then now here we are back on the floor of the Senate again. You know,
okay,
but not Yahweh style.
Where does Yahweh say? She said, "Yeah, God is watching you." Where does Yahweh compromise? Where does He tell us to compromise?
He never does.
He ever tell us to compromise?
Yeah, where does He want to say? You know,
compromising.
Does He ever say, you know, religion has some issues, but overall, I respect it, and I know that they're trying to do the right thing. It's just that, you know, we might disagree on something, but in a spirit of compromise, I still respect the religious. Does He ever say? I mean, for me, just phrasing that, you know, there's certain things I say, and I say, "Oh my God, somebody took that out of context and didn't realize." Yeah, of course not. I mean, it's so much the antithesis of who Yahweh is and His testimony is. And so,
well,
yes.
Look at when Yahweh came to the Jews, who were, yeah, they compromised. They attempted to take Babylonian influence into their, you know, relationship with Yah. Yah didn't have it. He was not happy with that at all.
No, I mean,
yeah, they were condemned for compromising.
The if you wanted a 60-second review of Yahweh's approach vis-a-vis compromise, vis-a-vis respecting and getting along, you know, read Matanyahu 23. But, you know, the entirety of it is Yahusha telling the religious and political leaders that they're hypocrites, that demon possessed, they're a brood of vipers, say one thing, do another, that they're wrong, that He has nothing to do with them, he despises them, and he's as aggressive as you could possibly be. The way He says it is the way that, Larry, you were presenting the facts. In fact, I would say He's more aggressive than you are. You're a patsy compared to what we read now.
But yeah, he had a lot more power than I do.
Quite frankly, your grasp of Yahweh's testimony and knowing how to wield it is exemplary among men. But he was better at it than you are.
Well, yeah, no kidding. He's better at everything than I am.
Yeah. And he was aggressive, blunt, in their face. In today's vernacular, he was tearing them a new one. Now.
Yeah, he was in major ways. And
okay. I want to share two thoughts here. One of them is very controversial. The other one is not. While that rant, and it's a rant, against the religious and political community in Israel was extremely harsh. If you will take any one of us, if you take some time and you just read through the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, you'll find that Yahweh's consistent rant against the religious and political community is identical. He uses the same words, speaks of them in the exact same way. So that is not out of character for Yahweh. It is consistent with his character throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. The second thing that I want to make is a point in this regard is something that that came up today with IQ Aversuli. The point he was making was valid. The specifics were misstated. The truth is actually vastly better than the religious nomenclature. Not only is there no Jesus, there really isn't even a Yahusha, and that God only has one name. There is no God of Yahusha. There is Yahusha really should not even be considered a name. It's a identity statement. It's a mission statement, but God only has one name. It's Yahweh.
Yes, that's right in Zechariah.
Right. He only has one testimony.
One name only.
Right. You'll find his one and only testimony in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. One of the things that causes both Christianity and Islam to go astray is this fixation on an individual whose name they don't even know, whose title they do not even know, whose deeds they do not know, whose words they do not know. And they've created this whole mythology over this man when he is, you know, as we approach Christmas, God was not born. Christmas is purely pagan. There was no Jesus. There is no Christ. There most certainly is no Jesus Christ. And even if we are to correct what he was called by his disciples, what Yahweh refers to him as Yahusha, once you know what Yahusha means, you realize it defines who he is and what he's doing, and that definition is vastly more important than putting them together as a name. It's Yahweh saving us.
Right.
What does it mean?
Yahweh saves. Yeah.
Right.
Well, and that's exactly what he said. Don't focus on my physical. I won't, I'm not
right.
going to adjudicate from that perspective.
Right. It's one of the reasons we don't have any aspect of his physical nature post-Pesach. It's why there was no physical resurrection. There is, that's why no one knows what he looks like, what he looked like. And because, by the way, even if you knew what he looked like on Pesach, you don't know what he looked like on Bukhoram because he didn't look the same. Never looked the same again.
Too. That's right. That's right. That's absolutely right. Yep.
Trash the crosses, trash the pictures. Don't want any picture of Mary with a baby. It's pagan. It's ridiculous. Don't want any picture of a man bleeding all over the place, hanging from a pagan cross. It's on a brake pole. And that image is not the least bit helpful. Passover. You know, and so every aspect of Christianity is just asinine. And
well, it works like a leech. You know, you call it a counterfeit. I've gotten to where I look at it like a leech. I mean, there's a 7-step process, and they take one step, they take it out of context. And they talk about blood smeared on a pagan
right.
cross. I mean,
they misname
it. It just
Easter.
Yeah, they just totally leech off the truth. It's not even a counterfeit. It's more like a leech of 1/6.
Yeah.
Of one.
Yeah. Yahweh calls it whitewash.
Something like that.
Yeah. He uses the term to whitewash, which is to cover over. The term counterfeit is probably mine. I use the term counterfeit relative to Christianity for only one reason, and that is that Christians, when you tell them the truth, they'll say, "Well, you know, there's some of that in my religion. You know, we changed the name, but there is this upright pole. We just make it a little cross." And you know, we do celebrate what happened on the first day of the week. We call it Sunday with the resurrection. Okay, we have a little disagreement as to what actually occurred, but we agree that, you know, he was the Son of God and that he spoke for God and that he what he did leads to our salvation. So, you know, we have that in common. And what my point would be, the reason I use counterfeit is if Larry, you and I went into the business of counterfeiting currency,
counterfeit than they did.
Right? Would we not attempt to make our bogus bill have elements that look like the real deal? Wouldn't we make it a blackish green in color? We're not going to make it pink. Right?
Right.
Are we going to draw pictures of Lincoln and Washington on our and Jackson on our bills? Or are we going to draw pictures of Muhammad and Hitler?
Exactly. You're going to go with Lincoln. You're going to try to keep it all looking at least similar.
But
they don't even bother with that.
But if our bills have one stroke that is different, just one stroke in 1,000 that are different than the real McCoy, what are our bogus bills worth?
Well, we might get away with it.
What are they worth?
If it's just a small stroke.
What are they really worth? Nothing. As a matter of fact, it's the reason I like counterfeit is that Christianity, that has a few strokes that are somewhat accurate and many strokes that are inaccurate, that when you have a single inaccurate stroke in a counterfeit, the bill isn't actually worthless. It's a liability because it's a criminal act. It will doing so, embracing the counterfeit, accepting the counterfeit, producing the counterfeit, advocating on behalf of the counterfeit, using the counterfeit, will land your sorry soul in jail. It's illegal. It's worse than being worthless. It's counterproductive. And that's the reason why I think the counterfeit concept works, but Yahweh's term is similar to yours. You know, the leech goes to the source of the blood. You're not going to find a leech on a dead carcass. You're not going to find the leech on the rock trying to survive. The leech has to go to where there is life and where there is blood. That's where the leech goes. And so the leech sucks out that blood and covers over that life. And so the term that Yahweh uses to describe religion, particularly Christianity and Judaism, is a whitewashing, a covering over, is the term that he uses in Hebrew to describe these things. And they are. The worst part of Christianity is that it piled its lies on top of the truth. Now, that does two things. One is, it makes, three things. A, it hides the truth. If you pile your lies on top of the truth, it hides the truth. And number two, it gives your lies credibility that they wouldn't have otherwise. So it's probably the worst thing you can do.
It's no doubt the worst thing you can do when it comes to taking a part of a truth and knowingly separating people from that truth and getting followers in order to enrich yourself. I think those people are going to wish they had never been born.
Of course.
You know,
You know, when you read Yeshaya 17 and 18, and you get to 18, and Yahweh is condemning America. And then he talks about the birds of prey that are unleashed against the world, that America unleashes against the world. There are two lines in the 18th chapter of Yeshaya which say that those who have promoted this war against Yahweh and against Israel, who are imposing themselves on the world, that they're going to wish they had never been born. They're going to wish they can die. They're going to wish for death, but they won't get it. It's really the only depiction of what Sheol is going to be like that I'm sure there are more, but that I have invested the time to translate. It depicts what it's like. It's a place where life is eternal, but you'll wish for death.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't, you know, I've likened it before to, you know, and it's worse than this. At least you have feeling here, you know. But imagine being locked up forever with nobody to talk to, no mental stimulation.
Right.
I mean, nothing, just nothing. Well, just but your consciousness
I would go,
is
I'd
out
go
there.
One step further. You look at a prison. I watched a show of a fellow that's accused of killing his wife. And he's in a Mexican prison. And there is something worse than solitary confinement with no one to talk to. And that is sharing a cell with despicable people who are constantly trying to take advantage of you or hurt you in some way, who find pleasure in the pain of others. And Sheol is like being in that Mexican jail where there's way too much overcrowding, way too many people in the space, and that everyone you're sharing that cell with finds pleasure in the pain of others and the suffering of others, and is always trying to find a way to take from you something that you cherish. And you're going to spend eternity with those kinds of souls. Those who are the very best at taking, of stealing, of hurting, of depriving, right? Whoa. You're going to wish for death.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm at least then, you would have the hope of becoming one of the bigger monsters, you know, in the sewer, be the king of the rats, but nobody wins there, I guess. So, yeah, I guess the only thing you could have is emotional torture forever, plus the fact that you can do nothing about it, nothing,
you know,
with no
Larry,
hope.
When I think of Yahweh's Torah to us, and I realize that we have an advantage. I think we can come to know and see Yahweh much more clearly than probably any people in the history of time, including the Israelites that saw his enormous and brilliant light and heard his voice on the top of Mount Horeb. And that is because we have the ability to do something that they could not do. We can look at his creation testimony, for example, where he speaks of speaking the universe into existence over the course of 7 days, and we could analyze what he said occurred on each of the 6 days of creation leading to a seventh day of rest, and we have the ability then to compare that to what science has learned about the cosmic microwave radiation and relativity to know that, in fact, a witness at creation would have experienced 6 24-hour Earth days, and that everything that he said occurred exactly as he said at exactly the order that he said in the time that he depicted. And with that knowledge, you read the Torah's opening statement that Yahweh makes, and you have to be a complete ignoramus. You have to either be religious.
I've actually presented this truth. I've presented that truth. I've presented, you know, the way it falls in epochs of time, explain it painstakingly to a boob about 3 weeks ago. I mean, I took a good 2.5 hours to break all this down. And at the end, he goes, well, like I told you, I'm not a believer. I said, no, you're a horse's ass is what you are.
Yeah.
I said, and you're irrational, and you're a moron, and you can't add two and
that
two.
Kind of information, and your jaw doesn't drop to your chest. And at some point, you have to realize that evidence doesn't get any better than that.
And then when you
look at the flood story, and everybody wants to poo-poo the flood story and say, you know, there was no global flood, and you say, you're right, there was no global flood.
I even included the flood story. I even included the specifications for building the ark.
Oh, yeah, and they wound up with seawater
alone.
Going in the process and
the
Burko crater and only wiping out humankind with the Nathalma, which would have been around the Black Sea. And up through Mesopotamia. And when you are, and then you, as you say, you compare the Ark, which has been found. You can look, if you want to see it, you can use Google Maps. You look right at it. You know, just the Turkish national monument to the Ark. And it'll take you, it's right by Lake Van in the foothills of Mount Ararat. In eastern Turkey, you can Google it. You can look right at it. I mean, Google Earth shows you the Ark. And if you look at what Yahweh had to say about that, about the Ark, and you compare that to what we have learned in terms of naval shipbuilding, it is exactly as it would have to be to perform its purpose, and it preceded the kind of design for a ship of that size by a scant 4,000 years. Okay, at what point do you say, all right, this isn't, there is no way, it's impossible that this could have been communicated 3,500 years ago and not be inspired? And then, you know, you look at the prophecies of Daniel, and the history of all time, and the fact that we have copies of these books. For example, you look at the detailed eyewitness account of what Yahusha would endure in Psalm 22, Psalm 88, and Yeshaya, throughout Yeshaya, but particularly in 53. And we have extant copies of those things that precede the event by hundreds of years.
Well, they even precede crucifixion, is my understanding, by hundreds of years.
They do.
You know, so, that's my understanding from everything I've read. I've had a couple people say, oh, that's untrue. Yeah. And of course,
the Assyrians came up with the concept of crucifixion, of hanging by ropes, around 500 BCE, 400 to 500 BCE is when they came up with the concept, but their concept was very different than the Romans, which was the nailing mechanism that the Romans used. And the crucifixion that's depicted in those three references for the Torah prophets and Psalms you just mentioned is the Roman application. The Roman application was invented right around the first century, late first century BCE. And so when Yeshaya writes about it, when Dode writes about it in Psalm 22 and 88, it's 750 to 1,000 years before that form of a public agony existed.
And you know what? Just the fact. Of course, we understand the Yobel count. We get that.
Right.
Most people don't. But most people are aware this is the last generation. They're all frightened. I mean, it's so funny. People that really don't understand it, they know there's something to it. But they're all going, this is, you know, I'll get people asking me questions in my box all the time. you know, and I just say, yeah, you know, you're living in the last days, and yes, our economy is going to crumble. I mean, people send me stuff right. showing the economy is going to crumble. Well, that's a mathematical yeah. certainty. That's going to happen.
Right.
That's, you know, right. there's nothing new. All of our money will be worthless. You know,
we are exactly as we are predicted in 750 BCE in from Yahweh through Yahshua. We are exactly as he said we would be.
But there's just a couple little exactly things I want to throw in there. A couple little things. First of all, the fact Israel even exists as a country is confirmation.
Right.
And he says he's going to call them back to the land in the last generation. And in
right.
the late 30s, correct. 1930s, they started showing up there again.
Correct.
We know a generation's 100 years, so that's just the way it's going to be. And
right.
and why would some little sliver of land, let's face it, Israel's in the middle of news all the time.
Right.
Why? What's it got
yeah.
there?
Because that they are as sorry as they may be. And they are, religiously and politically. As sorry as they may be, they are the chosen people. Yahweh loves them. Doesn't love what they are doing, doesn't love the religious, but he still, that's the chosen people. That's the place that Yahweh chose.
But I'm just going
to.
Back to proof. I'm
right.
just going back to proof. Think about the and just consider the very idea that a country the Romans took over, you know, 2,000 years ago and renamed Philistine after
right.
a long vanquished enemy, suddenly becomes Israel right here in the last generation.
Right.
And we're moving towards a one-world dictatorial
right.
government.
Correct.
Now, if anybody can't see that, they're living in a cave.
Correct.
Or they've given no consideration.
Or
Yahweh
telling us that the final battle, the war that's going to be fought, the prelude to that war is the fall of Greater Syria and ultimately Damascus. And Greater Syria is already fallen. And now it's the next...
LB just asked the question, are the 10 tribes going to be back
right.
in the land also? And the answer
right.
to that
and
is really...
He says that that's going to lead immediately to the thinning of Israel at the waist. And when you realize that everyone is pushing for the West Bank to be given to the Muslims, which will thin Israel at the waist. How
yeah, and they're all
proof.
Having a fight about Israel building in its own country.
Right.
How is that possible?
Homes, yeah.
You know,
fact,
how
Obama
do you tell people they can't build
Israel
their own
for building
land?
Homes? Right.
Yeah, I know. It's in every week. Every week there's something on it. It's really every
right.
couple of days.
Right.
But the 10 tribes really are not back in the land also. Of course, I don't really know that everybody that says they're Judah are Judah. They might be from another tribe for all I know, and I'm sure they can't tell you where they're from.
That
they'll
right.
all say they're Judah,
but
I don't believe that that's true.
No, they don't. No, none of them know. That none of them know.
But we're
Yahweh
called to go to the yeah. land. We'll be called to go to the land after it's all over with.
Yeah,
basically. That's yep. the way I read it.
You know, I don't think many of us, even those of us who, like I'm Irish and Sioux Indian, is there a possibility that I could have some Israelite gene in me? Possible. I don't know it. I'm unaware of it. Yahweh knows. You know, and personally, I'm hoping not. Because, you know, my interpretation of the last days and the administration of the millennial kingdom is responsibility.
You don't want to be an administrator.
I don't want responsibility.
How lame is that?
I know, but yeah. But it's true. I want to go off and explore. I want to go off and have fun. And listen, if called to serve, the last time Yahweh asked me to call to work with him on a project, every time he's asked me to work with him on a project, it'd be my pleasure. I'll do it. Let's go after it. You know, there are some caveats, and that is, you know, I don't ever want to be self-reliant. We have to do it together, and you protect my family. You know, those are the caveats, but other than that, let's just go off and do it. If he says, this is what I want you to do here, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to smile and say, let's go after it. Everything we've done before has been fun. I'm sure this will be fun.
You've had too much responsibility, yada, that's all. You've just
but
had
my, you know, my life has been responsibility, and I'm looking forward to having none. You know, we all have our reasons for being passionate about the covenant. One of the things that I like about the covenant is he's dad, I'm the kid. I like being the kid. You know, I like dad taking care of me. I like mom looking after me. Dad is responsible. The kid's not. I like that.
No, I like it too. By the way, at that point, I won't really care. I don't care if, one way or another, if I'm administering or not. I'm just going to be happy to be there.
Well,
I'll be happy to have made it. And I don't feel like I do very much, by the way.
Yeah,
I don't do as much as you do.
No, I don't feel like I do.
Well,
barely enough. I got over the guilt of that. You know how I got over the guilt of that? Recognizing that as a kid in the covenant, anything that I do, you know, when my sons do something that's impressive, I'm excited about it. You know, it could be 1% of their time, but man, it makes me really happy. I think Yahweh looks at you and I and James all the same way. When we do something that is that we bowed our back, we've stood up for him, we've spoken his testimony, we've shared, and it's made a difference in people's lives, he's thrilled. And so he is celebrating the positive, just as we do with our children. We celebrate the positive. We don't wallow all over, you know. Boy, you wasted an hour today reading the comics going off and seeing some stupid movie. No. And so I've come to realize that that's what Yahweh means when he covers us in a garment of light, is he gets to see and enjoy the positive, and the other stuff he never sees. It's irrelevant to him. And then I began to realize that the moment anything that we do becomes a burden, then we're doing it wrong. It's either fun or we're doing it wrong.
Yeah,
and so,
it's usually fun when you're learning and then sharing what you learn type of thing. That's
right.
Usually the most fun. I will say this, though. Eliyahu had a lot of fun when he was laughing at the religious morons.
He was.
You know, that had been, oh, yeah, he had a ball. You know, he had an absolute ball making fun of their God. And you know, that shows us how much respect Yahweh has for religion. None.
Right.
None at all.
I sense virtually everything that you read in the Torah prophecies, everything I read in the Psalms from Dodd, he's having fun. This is not a burden. It's not a job. It's not, oh, boy, you know, I'm really slacking off. I need to do more. No, that's not the whole concept is Yahweh does what's necessary. You know, it's that story that I've told 1,000 times. If somebody buys you a beer in a country club, you don't slap a quarter on the top of the table and insult them and say, you know, let me pay for this. You know, he's done everything that needs to be done. He's much better at it than we are. Sometimes we just need to accept what he's done and enjoy it. And then once you've accepted what he's done and you enjoy it and you realize he's done everything, he talked the talk, he walked the walk, then share what you've learned. And, you know, if you see, the other day I was, traveling across the country with my wife. I saw a beautiful sunset. The first thing I want to do is share the sunset. Now, in this particular sunrise, my wife didn't come over and look at it. You know, she was busy doing other stuff, and, you know, I invited her to come over and say, this sunrise is really pretty. And, you know, it lost some of its luster. And yet, the day before, we looked at the way that the light was working around the clouds early in the morning, and the rays of light was really beautiful, and we shared it. And it was more enjoyable. And I look at that as the same thing we're doing now and with Yahweh's testimony. His testimony, if it's just me reading it, is enjoyable. I'm learning something. I enjoy our relationship. When I share it and others are participating in us sharing it, it's really, the whole experience is enhanced. So that's not work.
No, I don't even look at this as work. I've always said, you know, I remember going to churches and trying to proselyte people. I guess that's the best way you'd put it, sales job, whatever, trying to get them to come into the door, and you thought you were doing all this good while you were really working to kill them. It's a whole different thing, sharing Yahweh's words, as opposed to trying to get somebody to buy into religion with, you know,
yeah, of course.
Our pastor's different, or our preacher's different, or whatever the
you
deal
is. You can just
is.
Completely relax in it, because once you know Yahweh, understand what he's offering, once your perspective is consistent with his, there is nothing anybody can ever say or do that's going to trip you up. You don't ever have to be on your guard.
I'd mentioned today about Lewis's son Richard that was circumcised. You know, he's in the chat room.
Yeah.
And I just
and I know, you know I when you shared
maybe.
That and Lewis I if you're in the chat room then you're listening to this program. My response to what happened is so enthusiastic, so joyful, because I look at this life is being so short, so full of issues, and eternal life being so spectacular with Yahweh, that you know I understand. I can't say because I have not lost a son. I have no idea what that is like. I can only imagine. But still, from everything that I know about Yahweh, everything I know about the covenant, you didn't lose a son. You gained a bond, a kinship, a friendship, an opportunity to be together in the absolute perfect circumstances for all eternity. You know, I see this as one of the greatest celebrations of life. And of your son's willingness to trust Yahweh, that this would be his last request for circumcision, trusting Yahweh, just saying, I'm going to rely on what you've said. I accept. It's hard for me to see that as anything other than a tremendous celebration. And as a dad, I can't imagine anything more rewarding, more exciting, more worthy of celebration than knowing that you helped provide entree to Yahweh and to the covenant to your son, and that he embraced it. I just think it's marvelous. And I apologize if that comes across as not being sensitive to the pain of loss, but I look at all of this life, the brief time that we're here, is nothing more than each of us having the opportunity to do what your son did, to do what you have done, which is to come to know Yahweh, to come to understand what he's offering, and to accept it. And all of us have to leave this polluted corporal world to benefit from that. So, to me, it's the greatest celebration of trust and of relationship and of sharing, particularly between a father and son, that can be imagined. I look at this as great joy. It's a time of tremendous celebration. And I hope that you know that's how you're envisioning it, how you're seeing it, and I the other part of it. You know, I I can't even begin to go there. I've always recognized that when you bring children into the world, you lay yourself open to the loss of having them leave this world before you do. And and yet, I'm now into a position where I realize that should we do our jobs effectively as parents and share Yahweh's testimony and his Torah guidance, and they embrace it, then them passing before us or us passing before them is really, at that point, immaterial. As Larry said this morning, see you on Teruah. Can't wait. Well, fellas, we never really got into the passages of the 119th Psalm. I wanted to begin with 146 and kind of review where we had been as we approached the Resh or Rosh, depending on how you pronounce the R in Hebrew, the Masoretic or the pre-Masoretic terminology for it, because there's just so many stunning statements. But what we have done in the last hour and a half is what the psalm represents. Let's talk about what Yahweh shared with us. Let's talk about who he is, what he's offering, and how we can capitalize on it. That's what we've spent the last hour and a half doing.
Which is exactly the plan. Because
exactly
there's nothing worth capitalizing on around here, that's for sure.
No. And it's the thing that families do. We share. We support one another. We share. We care. And in this family, Larry, you and I, neither of us won the jackpot on dads. My dad may be alive, but I wouldn't even know it. We did not, and from earthly dads, we did not win the jackpot. We lost. But when it comes to real dads, we have the best in the universe. And that's where
he is the dad. He basically is just called no man father. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, really?
Except him. He's it. He's my only father.
Yeah. He's the creator. He's the one that did it. And you know, when you start looking at it from that aspect, you come a little closer. You know, I don't have to consider my dad.
Right.
I really don't. I mean, he's not significant.
He's irrelevant.
I do consider Yahweh.
Yeah.
And I think about that hand stretching across all that time. That's impossible.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
it's just really... And to have all those accuracies that we talked about, whether it's the Burkle crater causing the flood or the dimensions of the Ark or even seeing the Ark on Google Earth, which I did. You know, Ron Wyatt's got a site that, you know, that showed it.
Right. Ron Wyatt's been there.
You know,
in fact, I've been in his museum where he has the metallurgy, and you're dealing with titanium. And you're dealing with molybdenum, and you're dealing with a fastening system that it's impossible to learn from.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a
wow.
It's marvelous. But the bottom line here is that Yahweh is his testimony is clear. It's brilliant. It's enlightening. It's consistent. It's reliable. It's profound. He proves his authorship. He proves his divinity. And yet, in spite of all of the power and the enormity of it, the brilliance of it, in the midst of it, you find a God that is on his knees saying, come, walk to me. I want to lift you up. I want to love you. I want to go off. And I want you to give you everything that I have. I want to enrich you and empower you and share time with you. I want you to just walk up and approach me. And to find a God like that in the midst of all that brilliance is, it is a wonder, Larry and James, that everyone doesn't come to know him and love him as we do.
It's there's so much to it that and he's about humor, he's about laughter, he's about having a good time. I mean, that is about the last thing that you expect from these religious deities that are laid out there, which are constantly having you on your knees and beating you down and saying worship me and so forth.
The Mikra are invitations to meet at parties. They're tags. They're festival feasts.
Yeah.
They're parties.
Yeah, they're chag. I don't see how in the world you get a starvation diet on Kippurim out of a chag. That's not much of a celebration.
They are festival feasts. They're chags. When Yahweh was with Abraham, they ate and drank. They had a good time. When the closest person, the person that Yahweh loves most in the world, everything he had to say about God, he set to music and sang songs. God loves to sing. Loves to hear us sing. Loves to have communication. And it's just, he is so spectacular.
Can you imagine the music he's going to put on? Whoa.
Oh, my.
Huh?
Oh, and the parties. Can you imagine the wine? Can you imagine? I mean, he talks about the finest meats and the finest aged wines that we're going to have during these celebrations. And can you imagine doing it on some planet out there that just blows you away with beauty and life that is beyond imagination?
Yeah, who brought the wine? Who brought the grill? You know, it's just going to be
big. Oh, yeah, by the way,
in
this case, the wine and the grill and the meal and the music are provided by the same individual who created the very universe that you're exploring. You know, I'm pretty handy at the barbecue. I think he's better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would guess just slightly. I just have to say, we're in a position where we can act upon the terms and conditions, the pakudim, the choke, the mitzvah, the mitzvah. We can do those things, and we should do them, and observe the Torah. And if we do that, we're in. We're in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's what this is
the
really all about.
The 119th Psalm
is this world worth much.
And the thing that Yahweh tells us so much, so often to do, Shamar, to observe. To observe means to open your eyes and to focus on what he has written on our behalf. And then to consider it. Closely examine, carefully consider. That's Shamar. And then he tells us to Shema, which is to listen to what he has to say. What he has to say is written in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. If we do that...
Isn't his primary purpose is to get us to understand his actual nature and what the plan's about. That
right.
It isn't
nature
some religious nonsense.
Yeah, nature and purpose.
I mean, yeah, that's the basic
and the means to capitalize on what he's offering.
Theme.
Right. The means to capitalize on what he's offering. It's guidance that teaches us who he is, what he wants, and how to capitalize on what he is offering. And then, like a good father, it also has the consequence of rejecting him, the consequence of ignoring him, the consequence of leading people in the opposite direction. You know, it's just like a father. You've got to tell your child, you know, if you turn on the light, you'll be able to see. And if you read the owner's manual, you'll be able to operate everything more efficiently. But if you trash the owner's manual, and if you trash the gifts that I have given you and you abuse them, you know, you're going to squander the opportunity. And that's what the Torah, prophets, and Psalms has to say. But you are correct. If you observe what Yahweh wrote, communicate in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and you do so diligently, you prioritize it, you do so with an open mind, if you do so with the purpose of coming to know and think so that you understand, then everything will fall into place. God becomes knowable, his will becomes obtainable, the wonderful gifts of the covenant that he's offering us become achievable. And it's not difficult. And for those who are listening who say, you know, that's daunting for me, then Yahweh has helped us help you make it easy. And that is, just go to yadayah.com. Go to introtogod.org. Go to questioningpaul.com. Read his testimony as it's presented there, because we've taken the time to translate what the words actually say, and then to explain the Hebrew stems and conjugations and moods so that you fully understand what the words that he communicated say, and then took the time after we had been enlightened and because we had focused on them, with the Spirit's help, we're able to say, and this is what it means. This is how it applies to your life. And then after you've done that for a while, then you can do it on your own. You'll be empowered. You're given the toolbox to do it on your own. But if you're saying, you know, I don't know Hebrew and I don't know that I can, you know, what translation do I get? Just go to those sites. You know, start with yada yada.
You know, you have a lot of, when you first start down the path here, you know, you feel a little inadequate, especially when it comes to Shabbat or when it comes to the Mikrei. You know, you feel like, what should I be doing? What should I be doing? And this is a lot more about understanding than it'll ever be about doing.
Correct.
You can't even have a Pesach lamb. I mean, I can't.
Right.
You know, I'm not on Mount Moriah.
Right.
I you know, I don't own a farm. I don't have
so the
ability
answer
to
is,
do it.
Relax in the terms of trying to be perfect, trying to do something. Relax. Yahweh already
yeah.
did it.
Yeah.
Observe.
Yeah. And understand that.
Pay attention.
And understand what all these
right.
things represent.
Right. Learn,
and think. That's
and after you've
part.
Learned and you've thought and you come to understand, then respond. I mean, that's it. Don't worry about the when and the how and focus on the why. What does it represent?
Right.
What does it mean? Why was it conveyed that way? You know, and then
and you know, his nature will shine through, and that's
right.
really what we're trying to do. We're trying to shred religion and throw it in the trash and just
right.
Display Yahweh's words the way they appear.
Because
what
religion
they really
has painted over, things. Right over Yahweh's truth. So we have to wash it away. We have
we're
to
like
clear it away. So
here.
Yeah, we are sweepers. We're sweepers and cleaners. You have to clear away the gunk to see the truth. And religion has done a horrible thing in causing people to misunderstand who God is, to misrepresent him, to make him meaningless and trivial. And so we have to clear that gunk away.
And religious in nature. I mean, you know, it's really a weird thing, too, because these people that claim to know Yahweh so well, you know, they don't know him at all.
No.
And you start breaking down his words to them and showing them who
right.
Yahweh really is and what this is really all about. And, you know, the biggest percentage of them just walk away shaking their head.
Yeah. And by the way,
they don't care what his words
yeah.
say. They don't care a
yeah.
bit.
Larry and James and I, we don't want you to trust us. We're not asking that you believe us. We're not, you know, creating a new anything here. We don't want any followers. We don't want any money. We don't want any allegiance. We don't want anything. All we are offering is an accurate rendition of what Yahweh had to say and some insights to help you understand it, think about it for yourselves. Go directly to his words. You You know, it's him that you should get to know, not us. It's him that you should come to understand, not us. And it's him, then, once you come to know and understand what he's offering, that you should respond to.
My signature on the forum says, don't take my word for it, look it up.
Exactly. You know,
that was, actually, I learned that one from my father. That's one of the things I have to give my father. He taught me well. And,
yeah,
that was how he raised me, and that's why I was never really religious. I was always of the, I'm not taking anyone else's word for anything. I'm going to figure this out for myself.
All right. I don't want anyone to take my word. Right. Yeah. It's fun to do it. But the process of figuring it out for yourself is you are benefited by help. You know, if you can go to a source that will provide evidence that or some tools that help you find the facts and understand the facts, make the proper connections between the facts, that's helpful. And so what Yada Yada and the Introduction to God and this program are designed to do is to help you come to the right place, have the right perspective, and to have a passion for what Yahweh had to say, and then provide you with some tools so that we'll translate some of what he said for you and explain the whole process. You know, why this word was translated this way. Well, how the stem and the conjugation and the mood influence it. And how we went to the oldest extant source to come up with this being the word that was communicated. And how that word is used in other places so that you build a foundation that is solid, and the ability then to construct the home based upon the way Yahweh provided us the materials to do so.
Yeah, it points you in the right direction, and it gives you the foundation you need to go on your own.
Correct. You know, a great example of that with both you and with Larry. At this point, your knowledge of Yahweh, your relationship with Yahweh, your understanding of what he is offering, and mine are identical. We speak with the same voice. We understand the same things. Why? Because we're going to the same resources. You know, and that's where, as you say, and I think it's important to reemphasize, Larry, that initially it might seem a bit daunting because it's so foreign, it's so different than religion, that it may seem daunting, but over time you just relax in it. The more you know, the more comfortable you become. The more you know, the less on edge you are. The more you know, the more relaxed you become. I've never heard Larry you fret about, or JB you either, saying, you know, boy, I hope to hell I've got the right day because, you know, it could be tomorrow for the celebration of Pesach, and if I'm wrong, boy, I'm worried about this. Never. You might be saying, you know, I'm trying to understand, is it the 13th or the 14th day? When does the 13th day start? How's the 4th? And you might say, you know, I'd like to understand the symbolism of all this, but there is no fretting over it.
No.
You know.
Maybe you're threatening worried whether or not I'm going to burn the lamb.
Right.
Then, it's still
it's
good.
All, it's a celebration. It's a party. When you go to a party and you've been invited to, that somebody else is taking care of everything that needs to be done at that party, you don't go to that party and say, oh, boy, you know, I hope that, you know, I do everything right. Hope I impress the host. No. Just go to the party. Answer the invitation. Come with a smile. Oh, that's yeah, it was very approachable.
Yeah, you're not really expected to do much at a party. That's what I do know.
No. You know, I
have a good time.
You know, the things that I find
you
the things that I find encouraging is that, you know, I look at the conversation that Yahweh has provided between he and Abraham. And I realized, man, Abraham was not the smartest guy around. He was not the sharpest tool in the shed. And you look at that and say, man, you know, if Abraham can be part of the covenant based upon how, you know, some of his reactions, then you say, you know, there's hope for me. And then I look at Dode and how much smarter he is than I will ever dream of being, and the profound nature of his insights, and how much we can learn from what he came to understand. I say, whoa, you know, that's something to aspire to, but I am never going to get there. And you see the full spectrum of, I mean, I'm not offending Abraham. He just wasn't that smart a guy. And Dode is the smartest guy in the history of humanity. And so you got the full range there. And it's kind of, by the way, interesting in that the covenant is started with a man who thinks like a child. And the covenant is affirmed, and it is celebrated, and its benefit is accredited to a man who makes Einstein look like a dummy. Got the full range. And so, come as you are, and grow as you enjoy being part of the family.
Did you ever notice? And this is little off the subject, but one of the things I notice more and more of, and I see this constantly being misapplied and misused, the focus of the New Testament. There's so much on being poor. It's almost like this badge of honor that you're living in poverty, you know. And I sit there and I look at that and I said, boy, it sure must have benefited them to be able to take from everybody else and impoverish them.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of that in the Torah. You know, he set up a totally different system, an economic system, where if you went out and applied yourself and worked, you were fine. And so was your family.
Correct.
You know, and there really wasn't a lot of mention about super wealthy or super poor or anything else in the Torah.
What is the benefit, you know, the fourth benefit of the covenant is to be enriched.
Yeah, being
enriched. Not to be impoverished. Yeah, it's not to be impoverished, it's to be enriched.
I'm just saying it's.
And by the way, I want to make really clear to you, when he's talking about being enriched, while the dominant benefit of being enriched is coming to observe and contemplate and understand everything there is to know about Yahweh, his family, and the universe from the Creator himself.
Yeah.
And the primary form of enrichment is understanding. Okay. That said, God has made it really clear. He uses the term inherit as it relates to the covenant over and over and over again. What the term inherit means is that you get that which is your father's. Your father gives you everything that is his. That's what inherit means. Well, he's going to give us the universe. Everything that has value is in the universe. All right? In fact, The only thing that has value outside of the universe is Yahweh, the creator of the universe, and he's giving himself to us too. We are adorned in him. He dwells within us. You know, it's his spirit that causes us to be his children and perfected. And so we're inheriting the universe, which is tangible riches. So it's not just understanding, it's tangible wealth. You know, way beyond the richest human of all time, tangible wealth we inherit. Now, does that mean anything to me? No, I don't care. I really don't care. But it only means something in that it's the antithesis of that Christian New Testament of the poor. God wants to enrich us. He wants us to be wealthy, to be rich in every possible way. You know, the Lord pushes you down. You're on your knees, and our Heavenly Father, the Father of the Covenant, lifts us up. It's about empowerment, about enrichment, and you're right, Larry. It's a huge distinction. Yeah, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of use for gold and heaven. I don't pretty much care if I have it. I'm not seeking rank. You're not seeking rank. Just happy to be there. Happy to be part of the choir. Happy to be a participant in the meals. To be an invitee. To be an adopted family. Just happy to be there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't think there is anybody trying to get rank, and if they are, they're in trouble.
They're in trouble.
You know?
You know, when I was a Christian, because there's that whole thing, you know, that of rank in heaven, from a Christian point of view.
With
right,
or
yeah. And I'm here to tell you that I do not find that appealing. I mean, I really don't find it appealing. I would stop all of this in a heartbeat if that were the motivation. I want to be known as irrelevant and as unworthy and as inadequate and. Man, as I said earlier, the thing that I'm looking forward to is having no responsibility. Man, if you're the guy with all the crowns, you've got responsibility. Now, there's one crown I do want, and that is that I'm being adopted.
The crown of life.
Yeah, well, I'm being adopted by the Creator God of the universe. And so to be his kid, I'm royalty. I want to be his kid. I'm reveling in that. And,
yes.
You know, and that, you know, gives you a crown because you're adopted into the royal family. It's a crown I'm happy to have. Happy to wear that one. And you only get the crown of eternal life along with it. But beyond that crown, I'm looking.
Can you imagine being royalty, though? I mean, in a universe that's full of life? I'm guessing it is. I mean,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But, you know, I just think that God is quite content with and quite pleased with the idea of us wanting nothing more than to have fun with him, to enjoy his company.
The only responsibility I'm looking forward to at that point is, I'm kind of with you, I really want to be there to call, you know, speak witness against people like Muhammad and Paul.
Yeah,
they're on trial. I want that responsibility. I want to be there for that.
Right.
That's about the extent of responsibility I want.
Yeah. And that's momentary. That's a fleeting moment in eternity. And so, and by the way, I'm not even looking at it as responsibility. I'm looking at it as enjoyment.
Yeah, it's a privilege.
It's a privilege. Yeah, it's a privilege. I'd like that privilege. Yeah, I know that that my testimony would be meaningless compared to his in the Malak, but I'd still like that privilege. You know, it's not a responsibility. I'm not saying I want to be acting as the judge, but I'm happy to be a witness. I'd love to be a witness. And
yeah.
You know, and I want the privilege, which is not a responsibility, of being in the back of the room when Yahweh greets some of his children for the first time that came to know him through the, you know, process of translating and sharing his words and these shows and part of this book. And you know, I'd like you guys right there.
Yeah, like you know what? Right and I hear that. You know, I'm amazed. You know, there's a lot of books out there that are supposedly about Paleo-Hebrew and Yahweh's words and all these other things. You know, you start reading any of them, and right away you find out they're wrong about most everything.
Yeah, yeah, they are.
It's an odd situation. You know, it's like people can't accept the words for what they are. And I, you know, the system of going at the words for what they say, you know, in a very straightforward fashion, and losing any traditional ideas you might have along the way. You know, like Yahweh being omnipresent. Right. I mean, that's one of them that bugs me the most. But
and finding total consistency.
It is totally consistent. That's how you know it's right.
Yeah, it's exactly
nothing
true.
Nothing changes.
Right.
Yeah, nothing. Right. Nothing really changes.
Totally affirming. Totally consistent. Totally dependable. Totally accurate. Yeah, it's a marvelous undertaking. It's the most fun you can have. Most rewarding thing you can do. Well, fellas. I love doing this with you. I'm sorry for my my failure last week. Apologize for it, but it's fun to do this with you. And I will tell you that the Shattering Myths show today in hour two and hour three, where it was kind of a chorus of voices, and we were playing off of each other. That's the most fun I've had in the 2 years of doing that show.
Really? Well, I thought you needed a break, too.
It was the most fun I've had in the 2 years of doing the show. It was a conversation. And by the way, Kirk's comment on at the end on Muth and the letters that it represents, I've got some more thoughts on that. Hopefully we'll share that on Monday. On what those letters actually represent regarding what the death is about and the path to life. I think there's even more to it than what our good friend came up with. Don't you just love his voice, though, Kirk?
Oh, yeah, I do.
I love his voice. I love his He's just...
Real down to earth. Real.
Oh, and so insightful. I just love that guy.
That reminds me, I just listened to, I'm this far behind, I listened to last Monday's show where you and him had the conversation about Yah protecting members of the family before they come to know him.
Yes.
And that was a great show.
And I think that's the case. I think that is the truth. I think, and the reason being is that, we might not know him, but since he doesn't live in the constraints of time, he knows us.
That's right.
You know, that's
what we're going to say. What were we going to say, James? Because I happen to agree that is the answer.
I don't mean to take it a step farther in that, you know, God lives, you know, not only outside of time, but because he lives outside of time, he's able to see, you know, not just what will happen, but possibilities. And I think there are instances where he knows that, you know, if he approaches someone and, you know, again, not in the beginning free will, but intervenes or approaches someone in their life, he knows that that will lead them to him, and he knows when that won't work. You know, like you use the example of approaching, Kirk approaching his wife. You know,
right.
Yeah. You know, Yah has the advantage of, unlike us, who has probably approached several women who there was no future in, he knew who to approach and who not to approach.
Correct.
And so I think there are instances where he can approach and come to people who otherwise would not come to know him.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that people recognize that while Yahweh does approach those who do not yet know him, and while he does protect those who do not yet know him, he is not usurping our free will when he does so.
No.
Because it's very much like you approaching your wife and you asking her out on a date. It's her choice. You're not usurping her free will to ask her to engage in a relationship with you. Yeah, well,
just because he knows what her answer is going to be beforehand doesn't mean he made that her answer.
Right. And by the way, it is not inappropriate, just as it's not inappropriate for us to choose our friends, and it's not inappropriate for us to choose our husbands and wives, it's not inappropriate for God to choose who he wants to spend eternity with.
No, it makes sense.
So long as he gives those he's approaching the opportunity to say yes or no. He gave Moshe the opportunity to say yes or no. He gave Abraham the opportunity to say yes or no. So long as he gives you the opportunity to say yes or no, he's not usurping your free will when he chooses who he would like to have in the relationship.
Can I ask you guys something?
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I did when I was searching out the truth, And thankfully, I heard you on radio one day and really got a lot more into Yada Yada than I ever did Prophet of Doom, of course. I mean, that's just hard to take. Yeah. It's just almost repetitive. It's just so sad. I mean, you know, the whole theme within the Quran, it's just a lot of garbage, you know.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, it's just the repetitive theme of threatening and murdering people and all this nonsense that's relentless, you know. I mean, it's unrelenting. But, you know, when I was on my search, I'd always wonder if people weren't really looking for the truth. And I would spend many nights reading all kinds of material while everybody else was out, you know, at having dinners and this and that and the other thing.
Yeah.
Did you find yourself in that boat too? I mean,
yeah. I was always curious. Going on a voyage of discovery, whether it was through reading something or going out in the world traveling or engaging somebody in conversation, my entire mindset is I want to learn. I want to know, and I've always been willing to reject something that I believed when evidence proves it wrong. And so, yeah, I think I'm like so many of us and so many of those that we read about in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, is that my natural inclination is that I want to learn, I want to know, and more importantly than learning and knowing, I want to understand. I want to understand how all the pieces fit together and how they all tell a consistent story. I want to understand. I have a craving to understand. And if I'm Yahweh, knowing his nature, I think he wants to spend time with people who are passionate about knowing, who are willing to, and I'm going to use this term in tongue-in-cheek, who are willing to sacrifice the time to prioritize coming to know and understand. And I put sacrifice in quotes there because I'm not sacrificing. We're not sacrificing anything. It's the most pleasurable, most enjoyable thing we do.
Yeah, investment of time or whatever you want to call it. I understand what you're saying. You're saying it's not a sacrifice.
So what you're saying
but
is
JB,
that you were
find
naturally
yourself
prone.
In the same position?
Yes, you were naturally prone that you prioritized enormous amounts of your time to know, to learn, to understand. That's been me for my entire life.
You're as an agnostic. And, you know, so for me it was, you know, the question of is there a God? Yeah, I hadn't spent a lot of time investigating it. But once I came to that point where, yeah, the evidence was overwhelming, there is a God. You know,
yes.
I had no choice but to accept that. The most important thing to me at that point was, what did that God say?
Right.
There is a God.
Right, yeah.
What did he say?
Yeah, because there's something
like
fundamentally wrong.
Going out drinking and partying, and I was staying home reading, studying, you know, translating eventually.
Yeah.
It was, that became my passion, my drive.
Yeah, that's much my
goal. Okay, well, so then we all have that in common.
Yeah, so, Larry, yes, we all have that in common. And second, James, your conclusion is what it drives everything in my life, is that once Yahweh introduced himself and proved that he is God, so he proved there is a God, he proved that he is God through prophecy, through the brilliance of his revelation and his explanations, then the only thing that matters is what did he have to say?
Yeah.
That's what
matters. The most important question in the universe at that point.
Right.
Yeah,
that's what matters. What did he have to say?
Is there a God?
Right.
And then if you answer there is a God, the most important question becomes, who is God? And then once you know that, it's what did God say?
What did he have to say? Right. And
then there's no
that is shattering myths. This program, all the books, everything is all devoted to what did he have to say?
What did he say? More important question than that at that point. Yeah, once you've answered those first two, you can spend the rest of your life on that third question, and it would be a lot
closer. Larry's outrage is all focused on that very thing. What did he have to say?
Yeah, just look at what he had to say, and then look at the prophecies he made, and look how accurate they are.
Right.
And look, even said they're going to take his name out of his own words, and they did it. They're going to twist his words. They did that.
Right.
They changed his nature. They did that. He describes you walking in your home with your Christmas trees. Isn't that good enough for you to
you
walk
see,
away
that's,
from it?
That's why I am convinced that our opportunity to know God and to see him as he actually is, to know him for certain, is greater than it was for the Israelites that saw his light on the top of Mount Horeb and heard his voice. I think we're in a preferable position because we can come to know him for absolute certain because of the very things that you have mentioned, Larry.
Full circle back to where we started the conversation on the show. Yeah, the only credential any of us have really is a horrible credential because our only real credential is we've invested the time to study God's Word. But there are
correct.
So many people
that's the credential
that same
counts.
Amount of time and don't come to understand anything. So that credential means nothing. The amount of time we spend in Scripture means nothing unless you come to understand.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm sure the correct. I'm sure the Pope has spent much more time than I have reading Scripture.
Yes.
But he doesn't understand any of it.
But there's
so that credential means nothing.
Yeah, knowing Yahweh, knowing what he had to say, is valuable only for those who come to understand. I mean, understanding is the single most important thing in the universe. Nothing is more important than understanding. And once you understand, then that's the ultimate credential. There is no better credential. There's nothing more to achieve. I mean, coming to understand who Yahweh is, what he had to say, and what he's offering and how to capitalize upon it, and realizing that the quest for greater understanding is the essence of eternity in heaven. Yeah, if you don't like understanding, then you aren't going to like heaven.
If you don't like learning and you don't like studying, you're not going to like it.
Correct. You're going to hate it.
If your idea of heaven is sitting around in the cloud playing a harp all day, you're going to be extremely disappointed.
You are going to be really disappointed. Yeah,
you've got to be a bozo if that's your plan anyway.
Now, by the way,
I'm
really like the harp. There are times I want to sing. There's times I want to listen to singing. There's times I want to drink good wine. I want to eat good food. And there's times I just want to tell jokes and laugh. But I'm looking forward to the discovery. To learn.
You know, I think the most important thing in the universe is relationships. That's what I think. I think that that's the only thing that counts. And that's what, you know, Yahweh's laying out a reality here. First of all, you know, you're not going to have to worry about how big your house is or what car you're driving or even worry about food or anything else. That's all taken care of.
But
we're just going to have a lot of rich,
Larry,
relational...
Right. The basis of the thing that makes a relationship special is sharing time together, is having common experiences, is doing and achieving things together is what makes a relationship. So these things are not the fact that relationships are the only thing that really is valuable, and the fact that we're going to be spending eternity discovering and learning and understanding, those are not separate concepts. The basis of relationship is doing things together, is achieving things together, is exploring together, sharing together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's right. But that's part of what relationships are about.
Yeah.
And you know, that's expanding and growing in that area. That's what it's all about. So, it just breaks down to reality. The point is that, you know, once we walk out of this physical trap that we're in, I guess that's what you'd call it, you know, it's our trap. You know, once we walk out of this place where we're all hemmed in, you know, relationships are going to be what it's all about.
That's it.
I mean, really.
I agree.
You hear religious people claim they have a relationship with God, but their relationship that they want to have with God is unlike any relationship they ever had.
Correct.
How does that make any sense? You know, your relationship with God is like your relationship with anyone else.
My relationship with God is like my relationship with everyone else. Yeah, it's exactly the same.
You know, it's my relationship with Yahweh is the same as my relationship with Craig, as my relationship with Larry, as my relationship with Patty, anybody in my life. You know,
we communicate the same way.
Time with them, enjoying time with them, common interests.
Right, exactly.
You know,
of course, now my relationship's a bit different because it's a little different because I don't take everything, say, that my wife says or that either of you may even say, you know, at 100%. But I certainly take his words at 100%.
Yeah, okay.
So
we recognize that he's a little smarter. A little more consistent,
just a
little more reliable than our other relationships. But
his
goal, by the way, in enriching and empowering us is to mitigate that difference. In eternity, it really is going to be the same, Larry.
Yeah, I mean, he's putting it out there to where, you know, this is going to be an eye-to-eye relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
that's
well
it's
put.
Going to get, it's going to get to the point that he's going to mitigate that difference. Right? I know that there's a huge difference now. We all know that. God doesn't want us to prioritize the difference, by the way. I mean, I really do think that he wants us to view him as holy and completely approachable. But in eternity, he's going to mitigate that difference. We're all going to be the same. Yeah, he's going to make us like him.
And obviously that is the case. I mean, that's the approachable lamb. That's that approachable dove.
Of course.
You know, that's what it's all about. That's I want to be known as an individual. I want to be greeted as an individual.
That's the outstretched hand. The open hand.
I mean, that's
what it means. Yeah. Guys, I got to go. I'm going to take my bride out to dinner, and I'm already later than the time I promised I would do it. So I'm going to say
okay. Okay, well, you have a good one, you guys.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I'll see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.